Welcome to another edition of the Doc Talk Podcast. I'm Kenny Walter. For this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Ali Al-Khazali, Dr. Stuart Albert, and Dr. Alexis McKee, all from St. Louis University, to talk about their recent study comparing GLP-1 receptor agonists with SGLT2 inhibitors for patients with type 2 diabetes. So to kick things off, what do you think the impact the study will have on patient care?
What kind of impact will it have? I think we have to back up just a little bit to like what the question was behind how we got to doing this study. And it really came from our fellow Ali, who's on here, and his question after all of the exciting cardiovascular outcome data and renal outcome data that we've had over the past couple of years is there a benefit over choosing one class versus the other when you're looking at your patients with type 2 diabetes? And that was his question. And that's what led to this meta-analysis trying to answer that question.
So is that exactly as you said, Dr. McKee. So our study is actually analysis of the existing data about those two types groups of drugs. And we were just kind of asking a question, which one is better in terms of cardiovascular and kidney outcome? And that was the answer was in this analysis that we did.
So we were hoping to basically, for people now treating diabetes, both endocrinologists and people in the primary care setting, we have a huge armamentarium of classes of drugs to treat, and it's now becoming somewhat confusing for non-diabetologists, especially why you would pick something over another option. And so that's what led to this study trying to answer that question. And I think that if we can simplify things for people, we can get more people on the appropriate therapy if we can just simplify the question and try to answer that question.
Now that leads to, I guess, a second question off that initial question. As we move forward through years and decades and whatnot, we're probably going to create more drugs than we are going to kind of remove because they're ineffective. How important is it for investigators and researchers to kind of set a almost a hierarchy of what should be used when and what is the best option for each segmented patient group?
So the American Diabetes Association has set up a series of guidelines, and we're talking about type 2 diabetes, and there will be a starting series of drugs, diet, lifestyle, exercise, and metformin's going up there in the first round. And then we're trying to decide how we can adjust medication I got Holly now. How are we gonna decide between other medicines, whether it's going to be cost or side effects? But these two drugs came out very recently in over the period of time, and there's been a discussion of whether diabetes control, whether improving blood sugar, where improving A1C made a difference in cardiovascular or other cardiovascular outcomes. And frustratingly, the diabetes control didn't improve cardiovascular outcomes because possibly there were side effects. Possibly there was trying to get optimal diabetes control resulted in low blood sugar, hypoglycemia, and there were some kind of the benefits weren't what we hoped for. And then here we have two new classes of drugs, the GLP-1 agonists and the SGLT2 inhibitors. And all of a sudden, we're finding benefits, cardiovascular benefits. And the question that we had, you have two new drugs, why would you pick one over another? Was one class better? Was one class superior with this cardiovascular outcomes? And that's how we try to ask the question. And so we found that for cardiovascular outcomes, general major adverse cardiovascular outcomes, they were pretty much the same. The GLP-1 agonists and the SGLT2s for general cardiovascular outcome. Realizing that the drugs were studied in people who had underlying cardiovascular disease. They either had disease or had diabetes long enough that they would have had cardiovascular disease. And for the two classes of drugs, they were pretty close when it came to adverse events or myocardial infarctions. But there seemed to be a difference if you looked at people who had heart failure. And does anybody want to talk about that?
Yeah. So what we found, which was shown in the individual studies, but we combined those data, and on a larger scale, we found out that the SGLT2 inhibitors have superior benefit in terms of heart failure hospitalization, which we didn't find in the GLP-1. So that's basically the major difference, as Dr. Albert said. Both of those drugs improve cardiovascular disease, combined outcomes, which included stroke, heart attacks, and mortality or death from heart disease, as well as also the kidney function improvement. Only the SGLT2 inhibitors showed benefits in hospitalization of heart failure. So that was the one of the major outcome or finding in our analysis of the previous study.
Is there any scenario where the GLP would be prescribed over the SGLT2 inhibitor?
I think we would probably reverse the question to, like, is there a scenario where you'd pick the SGLT2 over the GLP-1s? Because we seem to reach, at least in our practice here at St. Louis University, going to the GLP-1s quite a lot, because the SGLT2 seem to have definite benefits in reducing hospitalization for heart failure over the GLP-1 receptor agonists. The thing that we're running into, and I see quite frequently in my practice, is that yeast infections, the side effect of yeast infections is pretty high. There's a pretty high risk of getting that. And I think it's mostly linked to probably also where your A1C was at the time when you initiated them, and you're more at risk if you had really uncontrolled diabetes and you started this medicine and then you dumped a lot of sugar into the urine. But so we would reverse it like that. It seems to be that if you have heart failure, probably reaching for an SGLT2 inhibitor over the GLP-1 receptor agonist is reasonable, and you have to weigh out the side effects, though.
Now, diabetes patients seem to have a lot of cardiovascular issues and also a lot of renal issues. What makes this group so, I guess, difficult to treat? is it those kind of comorbidity conditions that are so frequently associated with diabetes patients?
I can take that question. So, I mean, once you reach to a certain level, you're like the higher the comorbidities, the less options you will have. For example, one of the major things that diabetes can cause, the major complication is renal failure, or the worsening of the kidney function in a layman term. And to a certain extent, really, you will run out of options if you wind up on dialysis. Basically, the only option will be insulin, and nowadays we're GLP. We can use it because it's not excreted through the kidney. Most of them, except one of them in the group, is not used if the kidney function, or what we call the GFR, is less than 30%. So I think, maybe to answer your question, the first question is, when do we use GLP or like over SGLT2? So GLP is good when you have declining kidney function, except, as I said, one medicine of the group that we can not use if the kidney function is below 30%. So, and then the other thing is the compliance. Now we have, it's an injectable, so not every patient wants injection. So we have some patients, they said, I only strictly want an oral medication. So then we cannot use that. Although now we have just came out to the market, I think last year, oral GLP, so that can mitigate the side effect. And then the other thing is we have three medications of the GLP. They're once a week injection. So for patients who are like less compliant, the GLP once a week seems to be a good option as well.
Okay. Now, what type of research, what else is kind of needed to kind of further expand this understanding?
Okay. What we need, each one of us as a practitioner, what we have to do is, when you do a research study, you put 1,000 people in. When you're treating one person, you have to adjust medicine according to one patient. So what we've seen so far is you have medicines that you want to design it where possibly you want to encourage weight loss. You want to improve compliance, make it easier for people. The insulins work really well in getting down the blood sugar, but these drugs work really well in getting the after the meal blood sugar down. You have someone who was just said, we may have a poor kidney function. We can't use that. We have someone who's very thin, and then we're worried about the side effects. With the SGLT2s, there might be ketoacidosis. We're worried about adjusting medicine according to heart failure. The SGLT2s work somewhat as a diuretic, which could be good if you're in heart failure, but also could give you dehydration, volume depletion. Dr. McKee mentioned a genital mycotic infections, candida, mammalian infections in women. And we have to talk to people about it. We have, so in 1,000 people, you can do a statistics. To an individual person, what we want to have the ability is to adjust medicines according to the need of that person. We may have someone going back into their renal. We didn't see very much difference in renal function changes between the two drugs. Although the SGLT2s, two of them, are already approved for improvement in by the FDA. They are approved for improvement in renal function. Dapagliflozin and the canagliflozin. And that's because the trials were designed. We didn't see very much of a change between the two classes of drugs. So that tentatively, if we had someone who had a lot of proteinuria, we would go along with the FDA's recommendation for approved drugs and then find out as time goes on, whether the GLP-1s had similar benefits. When it comes to research, sure, there's always research to be done. We don't know why the SGLT-2s have benefits in, there is speculation. We don't know why they have benefits in heart failure. We don't know why the GLP receptor agonists improve cardiovascular outcomes. These are really very good long-term questions. The SGLT2s are being approved now. I'm pretty sure we can check, but for heart failure without diabetes, but there is a specific kind of heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. We don't know what's going to happen with preserved ejection fraction. There's all kinds of questions that are definitely coming down for further research.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Dr.